what I well, did.
How about tell them about the backseater that he had a specific target for you to go to?
I'm sitting in the line shack one day in between missions, and here comes one of the 108th artillery guys, and he's got an M60 machine gun with him with a bunch of bullets. He said, "Will you take me up there on the Z? I got a target I want to shoot at." I said, "Okay." So he jumps in the back seat with the M60 machine gun. Let these planes get by a little bit. And I said, "Okay, where's the target?" He says, "It's just across the river in North Vietnam." I said, "Well, what altitude do you want me at?" He said, 400 feet. I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "That's a death altitude. They'll shoot us out of the sky." Charlie knows that. Either you're on the treetops or 500 feet or better above. I said, "Okay, I'll do it." So I go up there and I parallel the DMZ there. He's got the gun out there, told me where the target was. Now I was talking on the intercom, and he had that gun in both hands. Well, he hadn't switched his radio. He was talking to Don Hardesk. And we flying along, and all of a sudden I heard the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that, and it never quit. I said, "Man, he's going to burn that barrel up." But I'm trying to hold it steady for him, you know, looking straight ahead. And he's still firing. Finally, something hit me on the back of the head. I turned around and looked. His eyes were that big. He hadn't fired the first round. That was them firing at us. So you do a lot of stupid things, trust me.
Charlie, you got the mission where you had got the Silver Star. You were awarded the Silver Star. And would you talk about 25th of October, 1968?
Yeah, I'll make this quick. It's
don't make it too quick.
I won't. Anytime you get decorated, always remember this. There's always 1,000 other people that probably deserve that decoration. If you're not afraid and you go into the battle, that doesn't show a lot of courage. It's the people that were afraid to go in the battle, the guys on the ground that were scared, terrified because you're on our way. Those were the real heroes. The North Vietnamese were very, very smart, and they were good at what they were doing, and that was killing Americans. What they did was they decided to bring a regiment across the river from here to here. And our military, the 1st, the 5th Infantry, some of the biggest heroes in the world, were bringing their tanks up. Well, the North Vietnamese knew the weather forecast was going to be bad, and we could not get any air support. So therefore, you can't get any artillery directed at this enemy. So, can y'all hear okay? Okay. So what happens is the 1st, the 5th were all mechanized. They were on tanks. Well, once the North Vietnamese destroyed their tanks, now all of a sudden we've got this infantry guy that's used to fighting with tanks. Now he's off the tank, and now he's fighting. They're getting their fannies kicked, and they're on the radios. There was just a couple of us up, and the weather prevented. I flew, I don't know, 8 hours that day. But what happened was nobody could see the battlefield but me in my back seat. And what we did was we flew low, and we saved the guys on the ground. And that's not saving them, but we gave them directions. We gave them where the North Vietnamese. The North Vietnamese want to get real close to you where they can just lob mortars after mortars after mortars. They want to engage the enemy almost combat, almost hand-to-hand. That's how close they want it. Well, what we did, we, just like Doc was saying, we used our M16s, and you know, I could fire at them. I don't know whether I hit them, but I disabled the gun. But it's mainly just keeping their heads down so that the guys on the ground that are losing their friends can disengage and get away from them. And you have rope bridges and everything else. One thing that we didn't know, this is how stupid we were up there. Underneath, we always thought because of a water table that they couldn't dig down and hide. They had cities under there. they had hospitals under there. And when they kept coming out of this railroad bed, we were killing them right and left, and they're like little ants. We couldn't understand where they were coming until after the war, some of our comrades went into the DMZ, and they said, Jesus, no wonder they could live down there. Again, our intelligence wasn't very good. The volume of the North Vietnamese coming across the river, we would see them. You could actually fly into North Vietnam. Remember, there's a bombing hall. And you could actually see them taking training, doing driving skills. You could actually see them doing PT. You could see them cooking. It was nothing to go up there and see 150, 200, not more than 10 miles away where you're living. And that was always the bizarre thing of the war. So anyway, on the day that I got decorated, I stayed up there 7 hours. I brought the USS New Jersey in. What I did with them, because they're not real accurate, we had them sitting off there. And we'd bring their 16-inch shells here to block any more of you guys from coming south. Now, they don't have any reserves. So now, the people that they thought was going to reinforce them, we were killing so many of them here, they thought they were going to reinforce, and New Jersey stayed in the back. And finally, about 6 o'clock that night, we got a couple airstrikes in, and it was so easy. One other thing about the Air Force and the Marines, flying their A-4s and F-4s, you always hear about how many MiGs they shot down and all this stuff way up north. Those guys running close air support with those F-4s and A-4s were some of the most accurate, some of the bravest pilots we ever put with. Because we would tell them, guys, you're taking fire. And then Doc will tell you this last thing. We would bring the F-4 pilots and put them on our back seat so they could actually see what anti-aircraft and hear what it's like. They're not real brave in a 90-mile-an-hour airplane, I can tell you that. They'd always say, let's get out of here, let's get out of here. Okay, I'm full throttle. This is it. I don't have burner. But what we actually got them to do was run airstrikes from the back seat. Now, that's just like Doc and I talking to each other. There'd be gunfighter one, two's in, one's in. And they would just lob these wonderful napalm canisters. And I'm not saying it's fun to kill people, but when they're shooting you, it's fun to kill people. And you see those little canisters, and I'm not going to get gory about it, but that was the most effective thing. And then they would come down with their 20 Mike guns and kicking that rudder pedal and just putting steel in the enemy. And it was neat. But they learned a good lesson sitting in our back seats. And I think Doc had some F-4 pilots in his back seat.
Well, Charlie, you happened to mention the New Jersey. I wouldn't even bring this up except you brought it up. Tell us about the time you went AWOL and you went to the New Jersey.
A good friend of mine, Roger Bounds, I had flown up there, and we landed, and he said, let's go out to New Jersey. Okay, we had a helicopter. You know, in Vietnam, you can get a ride anywhere. We took a helicopter, land on New Jersey. So it was a Bob Hope show, 24th of December. This was cool. So we basically went AWOL. And so I actually got to be right there with Bob Hope and Ann Margaret. Thank you very much. And Roger Smith never left her side, and I don't thank him very much. But that was the most incredible thing, because we actually got to sit on the New Jersey with Captain Ed Snyder, rest his soul, just died, to see him lob the 16-inch guns, and we stayed on there for two days. And yes, I was AWOL, and nobody knew where I was, but at that time, I didn't care. And they had to fly my missions.
Well, we're fortunate enough that Colonel Jones is here, and would you tell us a little bit about your function while you were in Vietnam?
Sure. Marine Corps had observation aircraft, but in the period that Doc and Charlie are talking about, they pulled the Marine Corps pilots back and that squadron back to transition from the O-1, which they were flying, to OV-10. And the Army took over the mission of guarding the DMZ. The Marine Division was spread out side by side, regiments side by side along the DMZ. As I recall, at that part in South Vietnam where the DMZ started, it was only 18 miles long from the Laotian border over to the ocean. So my function was with the division headquarters at a place called Dong Ha, which was about 8 miles back behind the DMZ, but well within the artillery ring. And we managed all of the aircraft and coordinated with the Fire Support Coordination Center, which was a division artillery center. So we plotted all the artillery fires. We tried to route helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft around those artillery fires so we didn't have to shut them down. And then we functioned as the intermediary for Doc and his guys to bring fixed-wing aircraft typically out of Da Nang, which was another about 30 minutes away, and into the northern I Corps, which is what the Marine area was called. I can't say enough about what Doc and his and Charlie's guys did. They saved a lot of lives. I don't think you'd ever hear anybody who was there on the ground in that era have anything but high praise for the Cat Killer Squadron. Did a super job. The fact of the matter was that if they weren't up for some reason, if the weather closed in or something, that didn't prevent the NVA artillery from firing. But when there were Cat Killers airborne along the DMZ, they were a little more hesitant because they knew if they got spotted that there would be some fixed-wing aircraft with heavy ordnance on them pretty shortly, once the location was known. I'd like to tell my side of Doc's tale about my ride into North Vietnam. First of all I wanted to see was the south area where we were working below the DMZ, so I'm sitting back there fat, dumb, and happy. And I look down, and there's a distinguishing landmark called Finger Lakes, which I knew was north of the Z, and we're over it. Now, you got to remember that the last airplane I'd been in was the F-4. Couldn't hear any things, closed canopy. I wasn't very comfortable, as Charlie alluded to, flying around up there at 90 miles an hour. It felt like you were in a kite. And for the first time in my life, I'm thinking getting on the ground is not a good thing here. It's not safe. You know, that's usually your aspiration, is to get it back on the ground. Anyway, I had fired 2.75 rockets in the F-4. You can't hear them go off in that closed cockpit. So when Doc unannounced, first of all, I said, hey, isn't that Finger Lakes down there? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, we're in North Vietnam. He said, yeah. Like, what's the big deal? And then a little bit after that, he cranked off all four of those rounds, and I knew we were dead. I know they blew a wing off or something, and we were gone. So anyway, that's the other side of the story. But for all of the Marines that served on the ground in that area, I really like to thank the Cat Killers. They saved a lot of people's lives.
Thank you, sir.